Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plan people. Welcome to episode 4 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
I first learned about Summer Rain Oaks when I was researching and initially becoming obsessed with the concept of urban jungles in New York City. She is a model, activist, entrepreneur with a degree in plant science from Cornell. Very fancy, who is famous for her Brooklyn apartment in which she has 670 plants. Yes, you heard me right. Actually, she has over 670 plants and an incredibly adorable pet chicken. She's dedicated the last decade of her life to being a champion for sustainable practices in fashion, beauty, and the food industry. She's the founder of Homestead Brooklyn, a blog and YouTube channel created to help bring more nature to urban living. Her YouTube channel, Plant One On Me, is packed with amazingly informative videos about plant care and fun DIY projects for your apartment to help get more plants indoors. And to top it all off, she was the muse and inspiration for the Toyota Prius C. This is just a fun fact about her I want to share because she doesn't even drive. I feel like that's really baller to not even drive and have a car created from your inspiration. Come on now. There's seriously nothing this woman can't do or hasn't done already, and I'm so honored she took time to talk with me. I really hope you enjoy this conversation because we really get into a lot of incredible plant topics, so enjoy. All right. Hello, Summer Rain. Thanks for joining me on Bloom and Grow Radio today.
I'm so glad to be one of your first people on here.
I know. It's so exciting. We're so honored to have you. So first off, I just wanted to say thank you for doing the New York City plant swap. I had so much fun.
I'm very glad you can make it. And I'm so glad that people had such a response to it. I was so pleased because I've been wanting to do one for a little while. And I think so many of us follow each other on Instagram and other places, and we just never put faces to names, not even faces to names, but faces to names to Instagram accounts. So to actually meet in the flesh was just another level.
It was so special. And I was blown away by how many people were there. I mean, it was a packed house. And how one of my favorite parts was when you were like, you guys, you're going to have to talk to each other. It's going to get uncomfortable. You're going to, you know, you're going to have to barter. Like, this is going to be real human interaction. And I think a huge reason why I started Bloom and Grow Radio was this amazing plant community is so Instagram based and so photo based, and you don't get to know, you know, the person behind those photos. So I thought your plant swap was such a creative, fun way to get it started.
Well, hopefully it spawns other plant swaps, because I've had a lot of people message me, email, Instagram, whatever it is, and they say, oh my God, come to London, come to South Africa, come to Toronto. And I'm like, no, you guys live there, you guys do this. So it was part of the reason why I did, you know, how to do a plant swap in your area on my YouTube channel and on my blog, because I wanted to give people at least a blueprint, at least the blueprint that I use in order to do it, because I take it for granted, you know, maybe putting together events for me is a little bit on the easy side, while some people say, oh, I've never put together an event in my entire life. So at least it gives them like a step-by-step instructions in order to do it, because, you know, I'd love to see these start all over and have more people swapping plants and sharing stories.
Oh my gosh, swaps across the world. I love it. And also, even though having those swaps on a large scale, it was so nice to just meet other plant parents and have, you know, side conversations with them where they're like, oh, you wanted that plant and you didn't get it? I can totally propagate that for you and maybe we can trade in a future date. I mean, I made some like friends there. It was really cool.
Yeah, everybody was so nice. I think that was the key, which was wonderful. Those events become much more like something to look forward to because people are so generous and so nice. And I think it's wonderful that we get to have those person-to-person interactions that we often don't have. Or, you know, it's so easy, especially in a place like New York City, to not go out, like to not leave our homes. Mm-hmm. And I even have to be like kicked in the pants sometimes to even like do something, you know, with my friends, because it's so comfortable to kind of be in your own home sometimes. Totally. So I was grateful that people were a part of it, and that other, you know, businesses wanted to take part in it as well. I was grateful for that.
Totally. And it is so interesting you say people were so nice. I find that, you know, I don't want to make sweeping generalizations, but people in the plant community, if you get like turned on for caring for plants and like investing time in your plants, you're probably going to have a very caring, you know, lots of caring bones in your body. So it is a very special community to like get out there and get to meet.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of staying in your home, that's a great way to transition to your famous home, chock full of plants. What's the running count now?
I currently have a little over 670 plants, although I've just made a big plant trip where I went to go see some growers and to talk to different growers and communicating with them. And I have a big plant delivery that's going to be coming up. So I'd have to, you know, reconfigure a lot of things in my house. And there's a lot of new interesting species that I haven't tried before. And that's one thing that I really like to do, is kind of like see how I could, you know, push the envelope in my own home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to recreate little environments within different pockets of my house. So that's part of the challenge and the excitement that comes with things like that. So currently, it's a little over 670 different plants, a little over 400 different species. And, you know, the rest are kind of like cultivars or hybrids or the same kind of versions of a plant. But yeah, talk to me in another week or two, and it might be
gosh.
A different number.
Well, and it looks like you are constantly improving your apartment, because even this weekend on your Instagram, it looked like you revamped a corner.
Yes, I'm in the process of like taking a corner at a time. And there is this corner of my house, which I call the cacti corner, but it has a couple of my oldest plants in that corner, which was a giant philodendron, which was probably around 12 feet tall, that was in a planter, and it had like some leaves on top, but the rest of it was really just stem. So I was like, wow, I could take many cuttings of this particular plant and just make it healthier, because philodendrons really work well with stem cuttings, although it's not really the best time to actually take cuttings, which is like fall, winter, but still it needed to get done. And then I had a heterohelix, which is just an ivy that had been growing there and pretty much stuck to my wall. But ever since I had it, it had little brown scale, just like the little insect on the plant. It was just kind of sucking the plant's life out, and it looked fine, but I just didn't want it to be a vector for all the rest of the plants that were now starting to touch the ivy, particularly my Ficus lyrata, my fiddly fig. So I was like, okay, it's now time to just cut all this back, which, you know, part of it you feel a little like stressed about, that you have to cut some of this plant back that has been growing for ages. But
yeah,
and I knew I was getting a number of plants in, and I really wanted to kind of redo that corner a little bit. So it's constant, but I just try to make it a little bit more easy for me by taking a corner at a time.
Totally. And is your apartment like a one bedroom? I've seen so many pictures, but it does seem so spacious. I mean, at least to fit that many plants in there, it must be.
It's pretty spacious. It's a 1,200 square foot apartment, and it technically has two bedrooms, but the one is just an extra bed for when friends or colleagues come over to stay. And I basically give them my bedroom when they come in, which is the green wall room with the closet. Right. In, and then I take the workroom bedroom, because this is where I work. And so it's easy for me to like wake up and then work, but I like to have my kind of bed, you know, work a little separated. So that's why typically when I don't have guests over, I separate the rooms. But I actually, the greenest room was always the bedroom, really, until probably late last year, where the work room, I just kind of sprawled it out. I put all my figs in one room, and it really kind of greened up the whole space in such a wonderful way. I kind of tied my figs up in order to have a better corner for cacti, and I do get a tremendous amount of light. I get south with a little western exposure, and it actually is like, really, if I look at it, it's way too much light for my figs, but I can't move my figs any longer. They are where they are. So part of my idea of reconfiguring that corner is trying to get better plants who want all that light, who could withstand that light within those window spaces. And that's part of how you have to kind of constantly move and shift. Like I don't necessarily want to get shades in that room. So I just want to instead probably, you know, block some of the harsher rays with like cacti and some euphorbias and some other species that really, really like and can handle that light.
Yeah. And it is truly remarkable. I mean, I'm a novice really learning from all the guests on my show, but even just from moving plants, I mean, once you put a plant in one area, doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to live there. I've now moved a couple of plants that have like exploded because I had put them in too much light and moved them to lower, you know, almost by accident, but then realizing, oh, they shouldn't be like, you know, drenched in sunlight. They're so much happier now. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes get attached to certain plants within a home, as we all do. So mm-hmm. I have a section where I have a lot of humidity, and but it also has a lot of light. And I have some members of the Marantaceae family, which is the prayer plants, mm-hmm. in this particular section. But I was like, you know what, let me take a couple of these and put them into my bathroom, which has a northern aspect with a little bit of east window. And it's obviously very much more humid within my bathroom. My bathroom is the smallest room of the house as well. So it retains a lot of that humidity, and they do so much better there than they do in the humid part of the higher like sun section of my home. So I'm reconsidering all of these, you know, aspects, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, how do I do this? Or do I get a diaphanous shade to kind of block some of that light? You know, you have to kind of pick and choose. And of course, seasonally things change, you know, as we're kind of approaching the colder seasons, the autumn, the winter, things, you know, depending on whether you have a drafty house or not, you know, these things will often shift where you need to have the plants. So it's different than like a furniture piece. I mean, yes, we might change furniture around, but we don't do it as frequently as like, say, plants in the home.
Of course, yeah, because it's their living furniture, living art. That's what plants are, yeah. So talk to me about what is your winter practice of preparing your plants for the winter? You know, are there drastic changes, or is it really just that you're watering them less? Like, walk us through that, what that looks like for you.
Well, you know, it doesn't feel like winter quite yet.
I know, it's
so
crazy.
Warm. So you know, I typically will take my ACs out and start putting in plastic in the windows, because I do have some drafty windows, and I'm supposed to get new windows, but, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath on that.
With New York City landlords, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So so typically I would put, you know, a layer of plastic around my windows just to kind of maintain some of the heat and to be a little bit more, you know, cognizant of the heat that gets lost out the windows, but also the cold air that gets blown in. And typically a lot of my succulents and cacti don't mind a little bit of the chill. So I tend to have those in my window in the southwestern aspects. In the northern aspects, I have a lot of different and new species that I haven't had in the windows. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to kind of get a sense as to how low can they go. And I do have part of my spreadsheet is like, has general, you know, Fahrenheit scale of like how low those species might be able to go in the winter. And if it feels like a little bit too cold, then I will remove them back from the windows, and I will put them elsewhere. I do have a very crazy heater that just dries out everything. So
there
are a couple plants that are in the way of the heater, so I either am going to have to see, you know, again how they do with that, or continually get them, take them down and give them a good, you know, shower or misting so that they don't dry out, because that heat is pretty ridiculous. And then of course I usually just run my humidifier all throughout the winter to keep some of my plants happy and healthy, because that really does help. But I also do that in the summer, but I will do that more in the winter, and I will take more into the shower and give them a little good shower. And that usually has my plants looking just a lot happier. It really does make a difference.
Oh, so you're taking them in the shower? Because that's something that's confused me before, is you see these Instagrams of, you know, all the plants in the shower with them. But so you're actually doing that to give the plants the humidity. It's not that you're watering them in the shower with you, but it's more for a humidity purpose.
Yeah, it's more for humidity. I mean, it depends, right? I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. I take a plant in a shower, like this other ginger that I have. I noticed yesterday, or maybe not yesterday, it was maybe last week, that it had some aphids on it. And I was like, oh, it was like one of those really succulent gingers. Mm-hmm. And I brought it into the shower and I did some really sharp sprays with my interior hose that I have. And I do that in my shower just to give it some sharp sprays, because I don't use any pesticides or anything on my plants. So I basically continually do consistent sprays with that in order to knock off the aphids. So that's one way that I use the shower. The second way that I use the shower is to sometimes build up the kind of steam, and I put like a lot of plants in there, and I'll turn on the hot water without the plants in there. I'll turn on the hot water, steam it up, put the plants in, give them a good pore cleaning, if you will.
And then, like a plant spa.
Yeah, indeed. And then sometimes I'll do the shower on the shower spray on my hose, and then spray them. And it's more about giving them like water on their leaves, and some of the water will invariably get into the soil. So that's also watering the plant, I suppose. So, but letting it obviously drain well. So the shower serves as a multifunctional thing depending on what the plant needs. But I actually did take one of my Stromanthes, which is a prayer plant, and a few of my ferns that were looking a little parched from that southwestern aspect, even though they're a little bit further away from the southwestern aspect. The sun that I get is really hot. So I gave them a little bit of a shower and a spray and a spritz and a humidifier within this shower system just yesterday when I got home, and they're looking like so lush and so healthy. So I was happy about that.
Oh, that's awesome. So using your shower like your plant's beauty salon, spa.
Indeed, yeah.
I love that. I love that. Thanks.
Bigger shower now.
Yeah, exactly, with like a nice tub. Thanks for clarifying that.
No worries.
So what I'm super curious about is if you could walk me through, number one, a few questions about the apartment. When you were looking for the apartment, was like finding a apartment with southern light, like were you really taking those things into consideration when shopping? And also, did you come with, you know, 400 plants, or was there a moment where you only had a few plants? And what took you from maybe 10 plants to 50, and then 50 to 100, and then, you know, 100 to 400, and then 400 to 600? Like, can you kind of talk me through the journey of that?
Yeah, I'll try to answer all of your questions. So when I moved to the city, I was coming from college, and I think the only thing on my mind was just to find a place to live. And you know, at that point, I was really only coming with a couple bags, and I had no furniture myself. And I was specifically looking for, I'll tell you exactly my criteria. My criteria was somebody who was middle-aged, because I didn't want to live with somebody my age, because I didn't like to party. And I figured somebody in their middle age would be less of a party person, and preferably a female. And I wanted to them to have furniture fully furnished, because I wasn't coming with any furniture myself. And then thirdly, I wanted them to be accepting of my pets, and my pets meaning my exotic insect collection, which I didn't reveal to my then potential roommate back in the day, because I was like, having insects is kind of a weird thing. So I kept them in my closet within a terrarium. And it turns out I found really a marvelous roommate. Her name is Silvani. She was a middle-aged shiatsu massage therapist. And so she was really zen, and her house was furnished enough and it was really beautiful. It's the house that I live in today. And then she moved out, you know, 7 years ago now. And that was really the first time that I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I have this place to myself. And it really took some time for me to recognize that. And when she left, she did take quite a lot of stuff with her, and I wanted to get rid of a lot of stuff that she had. And the space is quite large and cavernous, and it felt very cold all of a sudden when she left. And so really the first move that I wanted to make was something that would really warm the house up, and what I wanted to do was get a plant and to make it feel a little bit more like a home. And the first plant that I got was a 3 to 4 feet Ficus lyrata, which I still have today. You know, it's almost approaching 8 years old now, and at least on my end, I'm sure it's probably older than that. But I, as soon as I got it, it just changed the room. It was just the whole energy and the house changed, which I know a lot of plant people can, you know, really admit to. And so I was excited about that. I said, oh, well, this is a change for me. And I don't even remember when I got the second or third plant, but people have written about my house in the past. And I think, like, you know, I had a piece written, you know, 5 years ago, and maybe that's when I had like 200 or 250 or so plants. So it was kind of like a gradual, you know, scaling up. And I think a lot of things, you know, happened and shifted in my life where a lot of the plants that I got represent a certain shift that happened. So like the green wall in my room happened after my first startup. I ran my first startup, Le Souk. It's called Source for Style, but now it's called Le Souk.
Yes.
I was running that out of my house for 18 months. And then when we got a new place to be aside from my house, a new office, the first thing I did was just wanted to kind of like, quote unquote, clear the air. And I had always wanted a green wall in the room. And that was one of the first things that I got. And, you know, the green wall holds, you know, anywhere between 65 to like 85 plants. So that, you know, all of a sudden, like, really upped the ante with the amount of plants that I had, because you're building on the vertical space as opposed to a horizontal space.
Right.
So those things were kind of like really exciting. You know, when my dad retired, he came down to New York, and we started doing like father-daughter DIY projects together that involved like gardening and greening the home. And that has been
like your shelves, right?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the mason jar gardens, and I have this drawbridge herb garden that we built together, and like a vertical swing garden, and we ended up putting another gutter into the bottom of the green wall, and we built out the closet garden, and I just built this really beautiful furniture piece that I designed with him that has like grow lights where I could start my seedlings, and then it has a place for an aquaponics setup that I'm yet to do. I'm still learning about aquaponics and taking a different kind of approach for plants and gardening with aquatic gardening. So there's a lot of things kind of in the mix, and it's just a really fun hobby, and it's really wonderful when you get to do it with somebody you love too.
Totally. And it's so lovely that each thing has a different story and a different attachment to different phases of your life or different people. You know, it means so much more than just a chair that you bought at IKEA.
Yeah, and I didn't really set out to have like a ton of plants. It was just something that really organically happened for me. I mean, I think that things change and people look at it and they're like, oh my God, look at how many plants you have. And I love collecting. I think that I have the grower's itch as I interview more growers for my YouTube channel, Plant One On Me. I start to realize the similarities where it started with like a couple things, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. people are jumping on, you know, greenhouses and becoming growers, you know. And I haven't, you know, made that leap or anything along those lines. So I do consider myself probably more of a hobbyist, a professional hobbyist in this sense, but But it's fun to have. And like I said, I like to experiment. I like to see, you know, non-traditional house plants, whether, you know, they can work in certain environments that I give them, and to, you know, understand a little bit of their unique history prior to bringing them into my home, so that I could get a sense of like, what's the best way to grow these. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. And that's also part of it, is I think for any plant parent, it's so important to know that you might lose some plants, and that's okay. It doesn't mean anything about you. Like, that's part of the journey with plants. They're living things. They have a life cycle like everybody else does.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell people that you can only be a good gardener by gardening more, and whether that's indoors or out, and you learn. And but I also have an appreciation for having the plants that I have, and understanding that sometimes, like, you know, plants go dormant. Like, so for instance, I have a lot more bulbifers. I have a lot more bulb plants than I had typically had before. One in particular is a Synandro spadix vermotoxin, which is an aroid, and it is a very cool plant. I mean, it has such a sinister name, vermotoxin, which is like a worm toxin. And it has a bulb, and it all of a sudden, you know, kind of died back, and it, you know, looked very pretty and earlier in the season, but now it's just a bulb, and now I have to kind of store that bulb in a dark place, and then maybe in the spring I could start planting it and giving a little bit more water again, and it'll perk right back up. But, you know, these are the things that you kind of have to be realistic about. And I also, you know, have a much more greater appreciation, even though, like, it's okay to kind of lose plants. I also have this, alternatively, this greater appreciation that so many of the plants that we see and buy in the stores, it takes so long to grow them to, you know, if you have a 4-inch, you know, 8-inch, 10-inch, 12-inch plant, it takes so long to grow that plant into the full size version that we purchased at the store. Maybe a 2.5 inch is not as hard to grow, unless you're talking about a cacti. But I have a newfound appreciation of how long that does take to get to that level. And so when I buy a plant, I do view it as kind of an investment, and that this is something that I would hope that could be with me for some time.
Totally. And the longer you have a plant, the more of a relationship, you know, you have with it too. And that is going to make you feel good if you can keep, like, your first Ficus lyrata?
Yeah, Ficus lyrata, yeah.
Ficus lyrata, for you to have that for, you know, you said 8 years now, that must feel amazing.
Yeah, and also to take cuttings. So one of the cuttings that I gave was to Kate, who was at our plant swap, and somebody had traded her a ficus cutting, but it would be no more than they did the cutting incorrectly. So it was just a leaf with a little bit of a root, and it would just continue to be a leaf with a root. Mm-hmm. And so I gave her, you know, one of my cuttings from my ficus, and the whole thing is like, if the plant is large enough that you could propagate it, then, you know, it makes things like plant swaps like that much cooler and more fun, because you're able to actually propagate, or at least take a clone off of your plant and share it with another. And that perpetuates the story, which is just quite marvelous.
Yeah. You're like sharing your love, or sharing the investment that you made into that plant with another person. And what is she going to do with that? And maybe she shares it with another person, and everybody has that beautiful energy.
Right. Absolutely.
Oh, that's lovely. Do you have a favorite plant these days? I'm sure that your favorites change with your collection growing and fluctuating, but what's exciting you these days?
My favorite really hasn't diverged very much. I really love the Peperomia genus. It's just this beautiful, often overlooked, wide-ranging genus that you could get, like, scandent ones, you could get slightly upright ones, you could get ones that are rhizomatous. Like, there's all these different versions of Peperomia, but they're very diminutive. And I absolutely have a hard time as hell trying to identify them when I actually go into, on a plant trip, or when I go, to Central South America and I actually see peperomia, it's so wide ranging that I can't always identify what I see. And I have a pretty vast collection at my home. I would say probably, somewhere between 40 and 50 different varieties right now. And they're perfect for kind of like city living because they are diminutive in size. They don't grow very tall or big. They're just so cute. I mean,
yeah, they're so stinking cute.
Yeah, I hate to use that term and to be so generic about it, but they're perfect. I have a lot on my bookshelf. I have a lot like on corner edges, and some of them could be very, very succulent, and then others could be a little bit more papery. And I'm always like, some people have trouble with peperomia. I'm definitely going to do like a peperomia care video.
Oh, good. I was just about to ask.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people tend to overwater, or they might not have great drainage within their soil because peperomia generally err on the side of very succulent. If you overwater them or the water is kind of sitting around their stems or roots, you will get rot. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to be a little more conservative on the watering side when it comes to my peperomia. Even the ones that are sitting a little bit closer to the windowsill, I tend to keep them on the drier side versus the wetter side. And when I just start to see them wilt just a little bit, then I'll give them a nice dose of water and making sure that the water actually drains, through the bottom. And I think that's like the biggest, care tip when it comes to peperomia, but they are definitely like one of my favorites.
Yeah, they are. They're so appealing. We don't have to call them cute. We can say appealing, but they're very appealing plants, and they are all over Instagram too.
They are. And I think the typical ones that you would see is like peperomia obtusifolia. There's, there's very traditional ones that you typically would find, in a garden center setting. But there's like so many more that I tend to find a lot of these online. But some interesting ones. I mean, I think obtusifolia and caparata are the ones. Caparata is the one that looks like it has topography to its leaf, which is really interesting. And obtusifolia is the one that's, very glossy green and probably a rounded, rounded leaf. But there's others that look like peperomia polybrata, that looks a little bit more like the Pilea peperomioides. And there's the peperomia frasierii, which has a very different kind of leaf than that typical possum tail or rat tail like inflorescence that the peperomia has.
And what about the watermelon one?
That's the Argria that has this that has that little watermelon, but they also have like I've seen different versions come out that have a little bit more of a silvery look. Some look a little bit more silver and green, whereas others look green and silver, and then there's others ones that have like mottled appearances. But there are some really beautiful ones. I went to a botanic garden the other day and I saw that they had, a peperomia rubella, which has this like really beautiful, like red undersides. And then, I've seen some peperomia metallicas around, which are like, this kind of like blackish hue, which with red underneath. So there's a lot of different ones that you could see sometimes at your garden centers, and sometimes you could find them a little bit more online, and they are really great for terrarium. So for anybody who's, hankering to build a little terrarium, peperomias are perfect. And like I said, they're pretty diminutive, so they're easy to cut back and they don't like grow horrendously. So if you need to kind of keep space within a terrarium, they are really interesting species to have.
That's interesting. That's actually my next, I think, project is figuring out how to do a terrarium. So maybe I'll look into some peperomia then.
Oh, for sure. I think like, depending on which direction you go, there's like, terrariums that you could do that are more succulent based. And then there's terrariums that you could do that are, more like, you can't keep any other plant than if, you know, it's in a terrarium setting. So like ferns, peperomia, apicias are very popular within terrariums. Yeah, I'm overdue to kind of like update a couple of my terrariums as well. And I'm planning on doing a couple terrarium pieces for Plant One On Me as well. So you'll have to tune in.
Yeah, absolutely. And terrariums too for the winter will probably be good to start because you can, I guess, manufacture humidity a little bit better, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's part of the benefit of terrariums. Unless you want to have like succulents and you have an open terrarium, like I wouldn't want to be doing humidity with the succulent versions. But yeah, they're perfect. And winter, you want to build up that humidity as much as possible, not only for yourself, but also for your plants.
And speaking of different types of plants, I was thinking it'd be fun on Bloom and Grow Radio. We're going to have a lot of basic plant care and basic, you know, starter plants. But since you are the go-to person for, you know, the extreme urban junglist, what would you say are some fun, you know, advanced plant parent plants that someone who, you know, has a collection already, maybe has 50 to 100 plants, knows how to take care of a pothos and a succulent. What do you think would be a good like next step for someone?
Well, there's kind of two directions maybe to go with this answer. And one of my answers would be to go with different varieties within groups that you already know how to take care of. So a really good example is philodendrons. Mm-hmm. Most of the philodendrons that we get at garden centers and stores are maybe one of, you know, 10 different varieties or cultivars when there are just so many other species out there. So right. One direction I would head with the answer to this question is to actually do what you do very well, but start to branch out into different species of plants within that genus, because that becomes a lot more fun because you have like different growth structures and you know that you could do these really well, but it kind of puts another, you know, species within your cap, and that's a tremendous amount of fun. I would say then another direction you could go if you want to try something, your hand at some more challenging plants, I think are ones that do require higher humidity, because there are a lot of really amazing house plants or potential house plants that if you just gave a little bit more humidity, that they would perhaps thrive within the house because they like to stay within that, you know, 60 to 86, you know, Fahrenheit degrees, which would probably be around 16 to 30 Celsius. And if you look at any of the kind of ferns, if you look at like maidenhair ferns or Doryopteris, the hand ferns, or pteris, which are like the wing ferns, or Hemionitis, which is like the heart ferns, like these are ferns that you can get your hands on at garden centers, but they do require a tremendous amount of humidity. And you could also look into bat flowers, which are quite neat. They don't have like great leaves in my opinion, but they have really beautiful flowers, and they're in the genus Taca. But a lot of those plants do require a lot more moisture. The other place that I think people could, moisture and humidity, I would say. Mm-hmm. The other place I think people could go, and this is where I've been kind of experimenting over the last, you know, couple years actually, is in aquatics. And I had mentioned that I want to start to do some aquascaping, and I've been waiting on the unit actually for a while to come, because it's a more of a, like a custom unit, and I guess it's taken a while to actually, you know, build this thing out. But you know, you could actually have really beautiful aquatic plants, you know, in glass jars. I mean, it's not considered a plant, but a Marimo ball, which is in... Yeah, it's a filamentous algae, but there are plenty of other aquatic plants that our fresh water that I've had living in, you know, glass containers for years now, and they are just thriving, and I'm really looking forward to actually doing aquascaping with them. So I would, you know, maybe take that answer in various different ways, depending on, you know, where that particular person would want to go, whether it's building up different species within a genus, whether it's trying his or her hand at a much more challenging species with, like, say, humidity, building up humidity, whether you're fabricating it in your home or just creating a little bit more of a humid space within your house. And then the other thing of just trying something totally new where, you know, it could be potentially like aquascaping or working with aquatic plants to kind of put a feather in your cap that way, so to speak.
I'm so excited for your plant one on me about aquascaping.
Yeah, it'll take a little bit of time. Like I said,
I'm be patient.
I'm still learning about that myself, and I have a whole, you know, editorial calendar of when all these things are launching. So it's so funny. You do it on a weekly basis, but you're just like, oh my God, there's just so every time there's like a new question, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I could be answering a question every single day and still have all these questions coming through. So it's fun. It's great. I've been having fun with it. I'm almost like, you know, 40 weeks into it. I can't believe how much time has flown with it.
It's amazing. You do such a great job with it. I loved Richard the cacti guy.
Who doesn't?
They're so
classic.
Fun.
Marvelous. But he's marvelous.
The way you edit them and the length, they're just the perfect length. They have the perfect amount of information. I think it's so, for advanced or novices, like, you're going to learn the way you break. The thing that blows me away about you is, you know, you have a degree, you are a plant scientist. You have a degree from Cornell University in plants, you know, and you've done amazing work in rainforests and, you know, with sewage, but you just make plant, even these incredible, you know, scientific names you're spewing at me, like it's nothing. You just make it so accessible for people.
I mean, I hope that, you know, part of it is making it accessible, but also helping push people forward with their knowledge. So to not necessarily, you know, this is always a challenge, I think, with somebody who communicates or writes in this, you know, sector, in any kind of science sector. And I always felt that, you know, being kind of an environmental scientist and entomologist by training and working with these very esoteric, sometimes difficult to understand concepts and topics, I always felt like it was one of my blessings and one of my talents in order to be able to bring some of these issues that I'm really passionate about out to a wider audience. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. You know, part of that is pushing the conversation forward by being accessible, but also by helping, you know, speak up to elevate the understanding of the people who are want or don't even know they want that information. And so part of it is not dumbing down the science, but actually giving it in a way that is still very accessible to people. And that's something that, you know, a lot of us are kind of challenged by, is to not make it just too fluffy or too this or too that. Because I've even found that, you know, some of the content that I found out there, and I'm not going to name names or anything like that, because I'm just being very general right now, but some of the content or some of the books could be almost like leave me wanting more, in the sense of like, what did I learn from this? And so when I try to put out content, whether it's on the Homestead Brooklyn blog or whether it's on, you know, Plant One On Me or anything, I always try to add something that allows people to feel like, wow, I just watched that 5-minute or 9-minute piece, and I've really not only am entertained, which entertainment is an important part, but like, I've learned something, and that's made me a better plant person. And really my ultimate goal with all of this is to really connect people back to nature. So it doesn't almost matter what I'm doing, in the sense whether it was like through the food that we eat or whether it's the clothes that we wear, which are, you know, two sectors that I feel like I've really kind of owned for a long time, you know, but now, you know, it's a way to kind of like, well, how we live our lifestyle. And if plants are like a way into that, then that's good enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, perfect example is at the plant swap, I got a cutting of a prayer plant. I've never had one before. I had no idea what to do with it. So I went on your YouTube channel and lo and behold, you had a whole episode on prayer plants. And not only was it, this is what sunlight needs. It's like, here are 11 different species of prayer plants and let's, you know, break everyone down. And I'm going to tell you the scientific name and we're going to talk about each one. And, you know, it was 7 minutes, but I could have watched it however many minutes it was. I could have watched it a couple of times and gotten little pieces of information every time I watched it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear. And I have fun. I have really a lot of fun doing it. So I hope I could keep it up.
Yeah. And you say that it's, I mean, because you started more in fashion, right? Where you kind of did your environmental, the sustainable clothing through modeling.
Yeah.
What did you say? You're like, you were an undercover environmental activist through your being a model.
I think that, you know, it's funny to kind of like start, you know, focusing more on kind of plants now.
Right.
Largely because it's so close to home for me. And when I didn't grow up with fashion magazines or anything along those lines. I grew up in National Geographic and my mom's like copy of the Rodell Herb book. And I was definitely a kid of nature for sure, hands down. And getting into the fashion world was a complete lark. It was something that I started to recognize within university that I wanted to kind of like, in a way, remove myself from people who really thought like me to challenge myself in another industry where I thought I could actually make an impact. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at kind of the scope of industries out there, I recognized that a lot of my friends were really drawn to pop culture, and that meant, you know, music and fashion and clothing and media and all this other kind of stuff. And that wasn't necessarily something that really drove me, but I recognized that there was a move towards this, this kind of like cacophony of industry that would, you know, kind of grip people in such a way and influence them. So I then started to challenge myself, well, if I'm going to make a real impact, you know, will I be, you know, writing these peer-reviewed science papers that are going into these journals, which maybe like 10 or 11 people will read, and maybe it'll influence, you know, federal regulations, but maybe it won't. And so after university, I was, you know, offered an opportunity to work with the EPA, and I was offered opportunities to work elsewhere, and I took a completely untraditional, unconventional route of moving into the fashion industry. And I always kind of described myself as like kind of this undercover, you know, person who was really an environmentalist, you know, through and through, and came in with this idea of, you know, values-based modeling, working with brands that were more aligned with my values, which we didn't have kind of a language within the fashion industry like that. I mean, if you chose not to wear fur, or you chose not to model for an alcohol or a cigarette company, that was the extent of values within the fashion industry. And I do believe that like my being in the fashion world really allowed for a stretch of language and a stretch of imagination for some women and men in there, where it said, oh, I could actually say no to jobs that don't really align with my vision. And that for me really opened up a lot of doors, because when you say no to somebody, you make a stand. And by saying yes to others, you start to formulate your kind of like, you know, this system, value system. And then, you know, I guess thankfully with a little bit of business savvy, I really, turned that into opportunities to be in consult with brands, creative direct with some brands to create more environmentally conscious products that were more socially aligned as well. And that kind of helped expand kind of into the world of fashion through this kind of system. Although I was never really, you know, quote unquote sold on it. Like it didn't, you know, I always did this for the love, for my love of nature and for my love of connecting people to nature, however far away it seemed. And so it's really marvelous to have taken this kind of almost 180 degree approach where I went, you know, kind of more from fashion. And now I spent a lot of time, you know, in the world of food, looking at sustainable food systems. And I wrote a book called Sugar Detox Me, which helps people reduce sugar in their diets, which is obviously a big problem. And related but unrelated to plants. I mean, I always see these things as really heavily connected. But the plants, you know, like I said, I've had plants in my house, you know, living in New York for a long time. This is kind of how I've been living, you know, my quote unquote private life, which is not so private any longer. But it's, you know, it's a part where I can now, you know, share it. And, you know, I've recently partnered with Airbnb to give garden tours, and
I saw that.
And part of the tour is my place, because I've had quite random people reach out to me from all over the world saying, oh, I'm going to be in New York, can I come see your place? And I'm like, that's kind of weird. Like, but then, you know, then I was like, what if I could construct it in a way where it's guided tours and it's both indoors and outdoors of like the beautiful gardens that have really cropped up over the last, you know, 12 years that I've been living in this area, because I have lived in the same place for quite some time. Then that's something that I could offer people. And from the tours that I've already given, I've seen that it's just been such inspiration. And if I can share that with people and have this like kind of plant stuff become really infectious, then again, that's another way to connect people to nature, even in their own homes.
Yeah, it's just another creative platform.
Indeed. And that's what I look at. Like all of these things, like whether it's fashion or food or whatever, they're all just tools in order for, you know, for me to be able to get out this, this message to people. And I always hope that people see the message not for face value, but that there's a greater hook there, that there's something that's much deeper, that's beyond, and people are curious enough to want to go a little bit deeper with the questions that they're asking. Hopefully they're asking the right questions to begin with.
Totally. That's beautiful. So Homestead Brooklyn's mission kind of is to help bring nature to people living in urban cities.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anywhere really in the world, but it's more typical for people like me who've probably been rural transplants who find themselves in the city. And I think a lot of the, you know, it's not to, you know, be targeted, but like that's the kind of millennial generation. I mean, more and more of us are actually moving to cities. And I think eventually that will kind of like cap off. But the vast majority of the fact is that we don't necessarily have our own gardens. And at most, maybe we have a little backyard or we have a balcony, but most of us are actually gardening in our homes. And it's a way to reconnect us and to feel really connected to nature. I do encourage people, though, that if at all possible, not only create the place that you want to live, but also the community that you want to live. And so Homestead Brooklyn is not only about really connecting people to gardening indoors, but it's about connecting to kind of the greater scope. So I try to cover a lot of things like, you know, trips, whether it's like looking at plants or whether it's like community garden aspects or, you know, I'll be having another community garden get together for people to volunteer at a community garden. These are things that I want to give people opportunities to do, because we don't always necessarily have them in the city unless we kind of seek them out or create them ourselves.
Yeah, totally. And I think for, you know, our generation, we are so overstimulated with, it's ironic because the platforms that you can engage with us are social media, but we are so overstimulated with social media. And I think it's so important for our generation to kind of get your hands dirty sometimes and just sit with your plants and not be constantly on your phone and actually just enjoy watching something grow, you know?
Yeah. And to bring it maybe, you know, back to where we started, I mean, that's the purpose of things like plant swaps as well. You know, it's, or getting out and gardening, like you use the tools that you currently have. And, you know, we have to be mindful that things like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or Snapchat or all these other places weren't really designed to solve real problems in life. They're not like setting out to, you know, message the atrocities that are happening in world or to solve like, you know, the clean water issues or things along those lines. You know, people started to use Twitter to, you know, showcase atrocities, you know, across the world because there wasn't any other, you know, method, but that's not why places like that start. And we have to be mindful of those things that, you know, these companies are there to keep you on the platforms, to keep you stimulated on their platforms so they could get better ad dollars and they could get a better sense of how you spend your life so that you could be targeted to. And I'm always mindful of that, maybe because I'm always directly so in the industry. You know, I've been an entrepreneur with a venture-backed company, and I've, you know, been in the world of fashion where you're advertised and you're, you know, put into certain boxes and you have, you know, certain check marks checked and all that other kind of stuff. So I've become perhaps a little bit too aware or maybe too jaded with this type of things. But, you know, with things like Instagram and Twitter, you could use it as a way to gauge interest. And that's exactly what I did with the plant swap. It's like, here, let's gauge interest. Let's see how many people would actually want to show up. And then it's about taking it offline and creating it for people, you know, for people and by people who want to, you know, get out of their homes and get together and share some stories. I mean, it's not for everyone, but for those who were in, you know, available to come out and wanted to come out, it was, you know, I think it proof is in the pudding that people do want to actually have some of those interactions offline. It could be scary and it could be challenging, especially when you have to barter plants, but you know, it's part of like being human.
Absolutely. It's part of the human experience, being vulnerable. You know, it's a lot easier not to be vulnerable these days with being able to be so removed and showing up and using the social media to empower you to then go and show up in person and foster those relationships and make those friends. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. Exactly. And if people want to see change, they have to show up. And from being in kind of the environmental sector and everybody signing petitions and everybody, you know, hashtagging with a specific thing, it really is about showing up and educating yourself and organizing in order to actually make a change. So, I think that's something that we've forgot maybe particularly within our generation. You know, it's there's the power of actually showing up and, you know, feeling like you came out to make a showing, and that you also are good on the follow up. And, you know, that I take that to heart all the time. And like people, you know, said, hey, you know, I want to do a plant swap again. I'm like, great, wonderful. And I've already had people come up and say, hey, I want to help you organize it, which is also marvelous. So it just plants the seed, you know, literally and figuratively and moves, you know, the movement forward slowly, but surely.
I love it. And if there was one thing for us to leave off on, I mean, one maybe lesson you've learned from taking care of these plants that you think everyone could learn, you know, if you were to have a plant.
It helps on the side of patience, at least for me, and to know that not all plants are going to be pretty 24/7. Like I was saying with my Sinandra spadix vermitoxin, like it is a bulb now. It has no leaves. Like, that it doesn't mean to be thrown away, that we aren't, you know, in a throwaway society. I know some cultures out there look at plants with roots as just a little bit better than plants without roots, like cut flowers, and that they should change with the fashions. And I highly encourage people to try to look at your plants as heirloom pieces and to recognize that they kind of fade. Sometimes the blooms fade and you might have to deadhead a plant, like Colin Coey's the Blossophedias. I can't remember the exact name, but the blossoming Colin Coey's that are being sold now that have the really glossy, glabrous leaves with the pinks and the orange and the red flowers, you know, those things I see often get tossed. But you know, you after they bloom, you could deadhead them, meaning you cut off the heads of the flowers and you keep the leaves and they will probably bloom again next year. You know, these things, you know, you have to kind of care for things when they're not looking so pretty. And I think that, you know, if we had an animal, if all of a sudden the animal starts to get a little old or a little creaky, or people, you know, we tend to have this kind of society of like, well, let's push those people or those animals or those plants to the outskirts. And I think that you can't always have that 24/7, and you'd be surprised as to when you start to give a little care for your plants over time, even if they don't look, you know, really pretty, they could still thrive, given the right kind of season. And I have like a whole shelf of plants right now which have gone dormant, and it just looks like empty pots, and it's not really attractive from the standpoint of what the way that it looks within the house. But you know, you're not, everything's going to be an Instagram shot, if you will. Yeah. So to just be mindful of that. And so I think that one of the key is patience, and knowing that, that your life shouldn't, nor would you want it to always be a picture perfect moment.
Totally. And experiencing that kindness, you know, that you show toward them.
Absolutely.
That's just beautiful. What a lovely way to leave off. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing all your wisdom with us today. So you can find Summer Rain on Instagram and Facebook at Homestead Brooklyn, YouTube at Summer Rain Oaks. Plant One On Me. If you have not seen Plant One On Me, go. They're amazing. Every episode is totally worth watching 500 times. Or you can go check out all of the amazing things that Summer Rain does at www.homesteadbrooklyn.com. Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio, and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.